So in both the Buddha's life and Harquin's life, we find this intense questioning and searching, this intense desire to understand the true nature of existence. If life ends in death, if life is painful, what is its meaning? What is one to do? What are we to do? Neither of them, Siddhartha or Harquin, were satisfied with easy answers, even good Buddhist answers. This burning sense of a question, a problem, is central to Zen practice. It's what's known in Japanese as a koan. And koan is a translation of the Chinese word kung an, which literally means public case. What Dogen calls the koan of ancient precedent. Usually this kung an, this koan, is a riddling exchange between two Zen masters, or master and disciple, which is kind of contradictory, which kind of brings up a problem. And probably one of the most famous, is the question that was put to Master Chu Chao. Does a dog have Buddha nature, Master? And Master Chu Chao says, no. Moo. Now, it doesn't sound, it just sounds weird, doesn't it? We can't relate to it. But that would have been a real problem in China and Japan. A real problem, because in Chinese and Japanese Buddhist culture and thought, pervasive over Chinese and Japanese culture, is the idea of original primordial enlightenment. Everything has Buddha nature. This is what the sutras say. This is what the tradition says. It's an idea for us, but it actually pervades Chinese and Japanese Buddhist culture. Everything has Buddha nature. It's not an idea. It's a kind of, you know, you inherit that kind of view of life. But then you have no other than, you know, no higher authority than the great master Chu Chao saying, asked about a dog, no, doesn't have Buddha nature. Not. Moo. And the disciple has to go away and meditate on that. You know, all things have Buddha nature, but the great master Chu Chao says, no, about this dog. You know, but everything has Buddha nature. No. Go back and forth. Sounds hard to relate to, but, you know, if you can imagine, if you really do take the tradition you've inherited of original enlightenment, of inherent enlightenment, you know, that's in you, and then you hear that the great master says no, and you take both equally seriously, it's going to be a big problem which you have to resolve, especially when your own teacher is standing over you with a big staff and asking you for the answer. Harquin himself, his practice was to meditate on Mu, no. And perhaps we'll hear a bit more about that later on in another talk. So that's the koan, the kung'an of ancient precedent. But we can also think of koan in a different way. Dogen again, and he was a 13th century Japanese master, speaks as well of the koan realized in life and the koan of daily activities. And Dogen's discussion of this, like most of his discussions of everything, is extraordinarily profound. And I can't really explore all of that here, but mainly because I don't understand it. But one of the points that he makes is that koan is everywhere. Life itself and all aspects of life can become koan, can become a question to penetrate, to ponder. Everything can reveal and show the true nature of reality. So Buddhist practice then, from a certain point of view, can be regarded as the opening up of questions, the opening up of problems. Buddhist practice will actually generate questions and problems and conflicts and dualities for you. And because of this, it means opening up the search for deeper meaning. It means opening up the possibility of becoming a deeper and bigger person, because these problems can only be resolved on a deeper level, on a higher level. In the case of the Buddha and Harquin, it's the big problem of life, the big question. What is it? What to do? What does it mean? I'm sure that you've all felt that too. Feeling it now, maybe. Why am I here? Why have I come on this retreat when I could have had a really nice Christmas at home? Yeah. What am I doing here? Or maybe that question of why I'm here has brought you here, has actually brought you here. You might even have come here with all kinds of dilemmas in your life about how to live. Shall I do this? Shall I do that? Shall I live there with them, or shall I go there with them? Do I go or do I stay? There's, you could say, there's the koan of other people. The koan of people. This is why Sangha is a practice, a wonderful practice. It's not just a kind of support structure for our practice. It's also itself a koan. There are these people that you're with who, you know, you're united, you're kind of united by because of your common spiritual endeavour. But on the other hand, well, sometimes you just find some of them just completely weird and difficult and painful. And you can't throw them out and you don't want to leave. So you've got to resolve it more deeply. It's a koan. I think that one of the main koans in the FWBO, in the order, is other people. Which means ourselves, of course. So you're often torn equally between these things, these opposites. It could be things like the life of activity versus the life of calm. I've certainly felt this at times, you know, that, you know, recognizing that I get a lot out of, spending a lot of time with people, teaching the Dharma, being very active, and it's very stimulating. But feeling that I'm out of touch sometimes with something deeper. And then, you know, being, you know, doing more and more on my own, say being on solitary retreat, I like that. But I'm missing something through not being with people. That can be a very, very difficult dilemma. Or it might be, you might have a seeming conflict. I've noticed this with some friends of mine, a conflict between spiritual life and artistic life. Seems to be a big conflict. Do I put everything into meditation and working to develop the Dharma? Or do I put everything into the arts? That can be a conflict, a real conflict for people. I've seen it. Often these conflicts are about much deeper issues. Probably somewhere you could track it back to the deep issue of birth and death, to the koan of what?